here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
I cannot tell you. It's confidential.
Oh, come on. Why not?
No, I can't. Anyway, how is your sex life?
Lieutenant Colonel Django used funds from the project's black budget to procure prostitutes.
That's a lie.
And to get drugs for himself and his men.
That... Well, the hooker thing is definitely a lie.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV radio talk show where a handful of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about all things film and television. I'm Marcus E. Acko, and my worst date movie is, I had that in my head, my worst date movie is Devil's Rejects. And my best date movie is Moulin Rouge.
I'm Laura Sampson. And my worst date movie is 30 Days of Night, in which I fell asleep for about half of the movie while the person next to me screamed, not the person I was there with. And my best one is The Night is Short, Walk on Girl, directed by Masaki Yuasa. It's an anime film. It's very sweet, and it's about a big night out.
With us in the studio tonight, the producers behind Vinny Vidi Films. Please tell us your names and your best date movie and worst date movie.
Hi, I'm Edward from Vinny Vidi Films, EdwardDD. I'm thinking of, in my mind, it's more the worst.
Okay, go for the worst.
Because it's they're the ones that stick out the most. The worst is X-Men The Last Stand.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the experience of being with the person. Well,
We'll come to it. Have you got a best one?
Moulin Rouge was all right.
Okay, good. Yeah, also with us in the studio.
Hello, I'm Natalie Ann Downs, and I'm also one of the producers of Any Media Film. By far the worst film I've ever had the unfortunate times to be in a cinema was Speed 2 Cruise Control.
I don't understand why you were classifying these as the worst movies to take on a date. Speed 2 is awesome as a date movie.
It's Marcus, that you are going to hold a flame to that film.
I will fight for Speed 2, okay? There's a theme to this show, but with that particular film, I will fight for it. Sandra Bullock is amazing in it.
Jason has transferred action
onto a cruise liner.
Yes! Jason Patrick, he replaces...
Even Keanu Reeves said... Keanu Reeves was like, he probably took one look at it and thought, no.
You have Willem Dafoe as the bad guy. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
Now, how can you say that? Why is that a bad movie?
It was a bad...
Not a bad movie.
I'm sorry, I'm just giggling here. I can't even speak. There's just no excuse.
Let me... Hold.
I love this. It's just amazing.
This is the thing.
Kind of polarised with literally like 2 minutes in. It's already turned into a massive debate.
I'm going to talk to you, Ed, in a second, because you're talking about X-Men and Last Stand. Okay. I have words to have with you on X-Men The Last Stand. So let's dissect Speed 2 for a second. Okay, it's not the best movie. It's not the greatest movie. Why was it the worst date movie for you?
I think because I absolutely loved Speed. And when I was young, I had a massive crush on Keanu Reeves.
Okay.
And I didn't realise when I went to the cinema that the sequel didn't have Keanu Reeves in it.
Yeah,
he's like, yes, go watch Speed 2. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I went along. It's like, Sergeant Bullock's on the poster. This is good. Where's Keanu Reeves? And it started, and I was like, this is not happening.
He's going to come on anytime now.
It was destroyed for me. I was like, I can't watch this film.
Fair enough.
And he was loving every bit of it, and I was like,
Because it's action packed and it's got romance in it, but fair enough. Okay, now, X-Men Last Stand. Now, it's considered. Here's the reason why I don't have an issue with X-Men Last Stand. When it came out, it was considered as the worst in the X-Men franchise, right? I mean, it came after X-Men 2. Compared to X-Men 2, Last Stand is... it doesn't count, right?
But then compare that to Wolverine Origins, right? Now,
okay,
that
we've had this conversation.
Exactly, we've had this conversation. Yeah, it's just exactly. So whenever anyone turns around and says that X-Men Last Stand is a terrible movie, I don't think, I'm like,
I think my experience was just coloured by, it was just made even worse. Even though I, you know, massive X-Men fan and sure, collected the comics, this film was just ruined by having, on top of everything else, a crying baby in a cinema and a fight breaking out. Because people were just, and because it was kind of like slowly starting and murmuring, you know, the baby was, you know, it was just a bit kind of like obviously bored. You don't bring a baby to the cinema to watch.
I was going to say, to watch X-Men, right? Yeah.
Probably the mum was just kind of like, I can't be bothered. I'll just stick them in the, you know, the pram and they can just watch.
But
yeah, it just was kind of like getting to obviously the most kind of violent scenes, sure, and just Magneto destroying, you know, the bridge, that scene there.
So it was more the, like, experience that, rather than the
probably
movie.
Okay, so fair, I have enough, rewatched, and I thought, do you know what, I do like the film. It obviously has its, you know, moments where I can see the writing is going a bit off and it's too much of the studio coming into it, but
sure,
probably the baby was still ringing in my ears every time I see certain scenes.
All right, I'll put down my shotgun.
I
now,
think so to be safe on a date, you really need to go for animation or yes, martial arts.
What?
Martial arts romance. I saw.
You want to take a date? Oh, actually, what? You want to take a date to go and see a martial arts movie?
Didn't you see Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? As
I wouldn't
a date?
Take. I didn't see it on a date. Movie. I went with Michael Amari. I didn't go on a date with. Well, actually, no. That's not, no. But yeah. Okay, fair enough. It depends on who you're taking, yeah, I guess. So yeah,
I've got an appreciation for it. Otherwise,
yeah, true. So that's the kind of movie that you want to go on a date with. You want
Crouching
to watch
Tiger, Belleville Rendezvous, and as I said, anything with really beautiful animation that you can talk about in any kind of awkward silences afterwards.
Fair enough.
Works for me, definitely.
Well, I took my date to go see Devil's Rejects, which, if you don't know, Devil's Rejects is a Rob Zombie movie. Yeah, there are a lot of horror fans out there that know what Devil's Rejects. You have to be honest, it's the kind of movie. The movie basically has the killers as the heroes of the movie. And to be honest, I walked away from the movie thinking, it did something quite different compared to all the other movies. You know the whole trope about how, you know, the masked killer is chasing after the blonde girl who's, you know, stumbling across a field and almost about to get killed, and then all of a sudden the her ex-boyfriend that you thought was dead half an hour ago comes out of nowhere and kills the masked killer. You know that sort of trope, right? They flipped that completely. Because it's actually, because the story follows these this family of killers, and they have this couple in a motel, and they're torturing them, right? And they're going around killing different people. And there's this cop who's chasing them, who's been tracking them across the country, trying to find them to arrest them. He finally gets to the place where he's now, he's chasing them, right? And he knows that he can't just get them arrested because they will somehow loop a legal loophole. They will, you know, get released and so on. So he's chasing the girl who's one of the killers, and he's basically saying, no, I'm going to put you down. And her cousin, who's like this tall, like Leatherface type character, pops out of nowhere because he thought he died half an hour before and kills the good guy, right? So the cop is the good guy because he's the one trying to stop these killers. But that's how they flipped it. And I thought that was pretty sharp. Yeah. But you don't take a date to a movie where basically it's like it's just people wearing people's faces as masks and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, yeah. So I married her. So you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
And with us in the studio, the producers from Vinny VD Films, we've got Natalie Andown and Edward Day-Day. Coming up on today's show, we will have our UK box office top five. Not ours, but UK box office top five. We will have Netflix and Amazon recommendations. And we'll also have our top five favorite film and TV or film or TV discussion. But before that, let's do some film TV news. Right, so we've got the news today. We're going to talk about Gotham Independent Film Awards, which happened yesterday. And I've got the list of, for those of you who don't know the Gotham Independent Film Awards, it's a prestigious award ceremony in America that showcases the best in independent films. So you don't tend to have your big blockbusters that show up or the ones that are that tend to be Academy Award contenders. Although from this crop of films that tend to get these awards, you tend to see which maybe one or two of these films that will step out and get into contention with the big blockbusters and the big ones that you expect to sweep, you know, the awards come February. So the film that basically that won Best Feature in the awards, it was last night. It was Call Me By Your Name.
Oh.
Yeah, so that film beat, I've got a list here, it beat Get Out, Jordan Peele's Get Out, which I wanted Get Out to win.
Yeah.
But it beat The Florida Project, it beat I, Tonya, and Good Time with Robert Pattinson in it. You guys heard about Call Me By Your Name?
Yeah. It's been really kind of picking up, I think, because it's just... I think the performances and the story, and I think as well the trend is now to kind of look at stories which are much more open to looking at stories which are either focusing on LGBT issues, but not just like, oh, okay, it's LGBT, it's just a story. They just happen to have gay or lesbian characters or transgender, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think that's
I think that director is fantastic. I mean, I haven't seen this film, but I think he did A Bigger Splash. I don't know if you've seen that film.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Matthias Schoenaerts and, Rick Fiennes, Tilda Swinton. I think he's absolutely just a fantastic director. And he has the most amazing visuals.
They're
very strange films. They're very paced different in a very odd way.
And what's funny now is like Armie Hammer. There was something yesterday where I think because people weren't expecting such a great performance from him in this film and how it's picking up. And so I think there was a couple of articles written about him saying this is such a surprise. And I think there was one journalist yesterday that he went off on Twitter saying, okay, fine, because I think she listed all his kind of credits saying Lone Ranger was, and, you know, this is a bit out of the blue. And kind of like saying, well, you're only getting these better roles now because... you know, you're privileged, white male, good-looking.
That's ridiculous.
So then he just said on, you know, Twitter to her, you know, thanks for crediting all, you know, obviously my movie roles. I'm an actor. I just love doing what I do. And that's basically it. And then everybody kind of, like, defended him as well. So you had Jay Baruchel and other actors as well just saying, you know, this is a bit mean. So I think it's kind of interesting now that people are just a bit more kind of championing stuff, that a bit more kind of alternative and just...
See, and that's the thing. Armie Hammer, with that comment about how he's getting... I mean, you look at Armie Hammer, he looks like the matinee idol for Hollywood, but he hasn't really had that much success. I mean, you talked about the fact that Lone Ranger, it didn't do well. It had him, it had Johnny Depp in it and so on, but it still wasn't successful. But him as an actor, I mean, I first saw him in Social Network, and he plays
great in that.
The twins. Actually, yes, and the Winklevoss twins. And he plays two they are...
Oh my gosh, they're amazing.
And he plays both characters, and you can see the slight difference in both of them, and he's fantastic in that. So for this is obviously, that was obviously a journalist who hasn't done their research, who's basically seen Lone Ranger and just basically seen that didn't, you know, didn't take off, and so just made a snap judgment. But hey,
he's proven them wrong with obviously the awards. You know,
absolutely,
awards are coming in for it, so hopefully he might do well at the Oscars.
So he'll probably will get nominated for Oscars. The next ones that and the best screenplay, Get Out by Jordan Peele, that beat Call Me By Your Name. It beat The Big Sick, which is, I kind of like The Big Sick, but I prefer Get Out. And Lady Bird. Lady Bird's getting a lot of a lot of buzz.
I read something which is amazing, that it's just yesterday on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got the 100% rating.
Okay.
The first film ever in history to ever have that.
Really?
So yeah, so it's kind of like, I think this was kind of like last night or the day before. So it's the first film in history. So everyone's a bit like kind of...
I'll need to look at that, because I think Get Out had 100% rating for quite a while.
I think it's this one. I don't know whether Get Out had 98% or something. I'm sure it's really up there. But this one, apparently, everyone is saying this is unheard of.
Fair enough.
But they're saying, obviously, Rotten Tomatoes is kind of, they have their own kind of audience, but Rotten Tomatoes is like the benchmark. So,
no, absolutely, yeah.
So maybe this film is probably
Rotten Tomatoes is, it's able to kill films now. It's so powerful.
It's mainly because they're the only ones really. I mean, not that they're the only ones. They were the first ones to do it, and they've basically cornered the market on accumulating other critics and audiences' reviews, and then just putting it out there. And nobody else has been able to beat them. So everyone just says it's now becoming locked in the common lexicon. It's like
they
you
are
know,
the first people I go to. I always used to be Metacritic.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Kind of slightly more difficult to navigate while you're trying to pretend to be at work doing whatever it is you're supposed to be doing.
It's kind of the same as Google and Yahoo. It's like, you know, if you want to search for something, you just say, yeah, just Google it. You know, who says Yahoo things? I don't Yahoo or Ask Jeeves. You know, I remember using Ask Jeeves, like at least 15 years ago. And then
back
now,
in the day.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of thing. Anyway, so that was best screenplay for Get Out. Best actor, James Franco. He's taking it for The Disaster Artist.
Oh, I really want to see that.
As soon as that movie comes out, I'm queuing up to go see that. If you don't know Disaster Artist, it's a film chronicling the creation of the movie The Room, which if you haven't seen The Room, please go and see it. It is a thing. It is a thing to behold.
It may or may not feature later on in the show.
Absolutely. But it is, so that's James Franco won Best Actor for it. He beat Willem Dafoe, he beat Adam Sandler, he beat Daniel Kaluuya, he beat Rob Pattinson. And then Best Actress, Saoirse Ronan from Lady Bird. So she beat Margot Robbie from I, Tonya, and a number of other people as well. So it's just so that they are potentially going to now filter through to the Oscar season, and most likely, depending on what the the marketing campaign happens, they might get pushed into it. So we might see Armie Hammer be selected as one of the actors for best actor at the Oscars, and then Call Me by Your Name will most likely be featured in, because they do 10 films now, right? In the Oscars, the Best Picture. Yeah. So Call Me by Your Name will definitely feature in there, so we'll Get Out, I guess.
Do you think kind of with these award shows, like obviously later on we've got the Emmys and they're probably next year, but do you think because of how we're seeing with what's happened with the Gotham Awards, these kind of independent films that are kind of alternative but still very diverse, do you think that's going to be reflected next year in the Oscars? Now they're kind of like thinking, right, we need to get on this.
I don't think that'll happen this Oscar season. I think maybe, because that's the thing, there hasn't been that much of a push for, because it seems Oscar is always, it's very reactive. They have this knee-jerk reaction to whatever happens. So to the environment. I'll give you an example. A few years ago, it was basically the fact that it was Oscars so white. So it was basically there were no actors of color nominated in any of the categories. And in the very next one, it was like, okay, we need to completely reverse this and do something different. So what do? They get Chris Rock out to come in to host the Oscars, and then they start nominating people whether it's really deserved or not. They nominate them to be on the show. I think that's basically what it is. They're just very reactive. At the moment, the main focus is not on indie films. It's more. It's sad to say, it's more the whole sexual harassment thing that's going around. So I think if anything were to happen, if Oscar were to, the Academy were to do that knee-jerk reaction, it'll be more to that, more towards that, than it would be towards.
So there'll be more sympathy towards female directors.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if Lady Bird has features. But not saying that.
Probably why it's picking up so much.
I think maybe as well, like Battle of the Sexes. Have you heard about this?
Absolutely.
New one? I think Battle of the Sexes.
Emma Stone and Steve Carell. Yeah.
I think that's probably got Oscars written all over
Absolutely.
It for the same reason.
It's weird. You can see
strong
some films
female,
straight away.
Historical characters that they can kind of bring back. Make a point with.
That itself actually checks a lot of the boxes that Oscars would want to go for. So it has a strong female character who's going against the male, the patriarchal industry. It's a period piece. It's got Oscar darlings. It's got Emma Stone, who already won an Oscar for La La Land. Steve Carell nominated for the wrestling movie. I can't remember what it's called.
Channing
Tatum. So he was nominated for that. And so,
Saoirse Ronan won?
She was nominated for Brooklyn.
She got nominated for Atonement as well, I think. Was it Atonement?
Yes, she was.
Because that was like her, that was a breakout movie, she got nominated for that. So she'll get nominated for this one. I don't think she'll get it though. I think if anything, probably Emma Stone will get it. So
you think so?
Yeah,
double whammy.
Yeah, exactly right. Because I don't know if any actresses have done back-to-back Oscars. I know Tom Hanks did it. Who else?
Russell Crowe, I think.
Did Russell Crowe do it?
Gladiator and then Beautiful Mind, I think, the following year.
Okay, so, yeah, so...
Oh, and from Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained.
But it wasn't back-to-back, though. There was a year between. Yeah, it was a year between. But it was the fact that it was...
like back-to-back.
Yeah, it was mainly because it was his next Tarantino movie, and then he got it. So it's kind of like every Tarantino movie that he's in, he's definitely going to get it. So he found a perfect writing partner in there. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us, we've got the producers from Vinny VD Film. We've got Natalie Andown and Edward Day. Thank you guys for coming back in. Natalie, weren't here the last time.
I was not here the last time. Yeah. No, I was travelling the Highlands. So
were you listening
to that? I was. I did tune in, but then it kind of tunes out when you're in the Highlands. You can't get much of anything.
Yeah, fair enough. tell us about yourselves. We haven't done a spotlight. I mean, we were talking a lot about that movie, about the Gotham Awards. We're kind of eating, but don't worry. I'm bringing it back to you guys. Tell us about have you got any projects working on at the moment?
Yeah, we kind of at the moment, we're developing a series of short films, which Nat is looking to direct, and we're kind of developing together with a couple of choreographers, is a series of narrative dance-based short films, but looking at kind of using the environment that we can find around us to create something quite original and inventive.
Yeah, so I think they're going to be really interesting. We're working with some really fantastic contemporary dancers, and we're kind of treating the film as almost like a site-specific filmmaking practice.
Okay.
So we're getting some really unusual locations, and then we're going to create the work and then film the work and create narratives with it, and create a series of short films.
How many?
I think at the moment we're talking like 4 or 5.
Okay, fair enough.
4 or 5 is a little kind of set of work, which is obviously silent, but is because there's a big theme at the minute with dancing. You've got La La Land, lots of singing, and it's about kind of understanding and looking at how you use contemporary dance as a narrative, and then you're not just filming the dance, the film is part of telling that story.
Okay, so are you still in the development mode for these four films? These four
or five
films?
Yeah, still in development mode.
Okay, fair enough. How are you getting what are you doing for the music to score the movies, the films? Are you getting existing established music, or are you having someone to actually compose something original for the project?
I think each one of them will be different.
Okay.
So there'll be, and it also depends on what type of work we're doing, whether it's a period on a piece or not. We haven't decided. There's lots of elements still to talk through. But we'll definitely, we haven't penned anyone down yet, but there are a couple of people who we have been talking to create original scores that the dancers will then choreograph to that exact score.
Yeah.
And then will be filmed. And there's some other ones where we're giving them classical work.
Okay.
And they'll work something out around about that.
Okay. I know you've already done some short films in the past.
Yes.
How can someone, if someone wanted to watch your existing work, how can they get a hold of your work to see it?
They can go on our website, and currently we have a short film which is out on Amazon now, which is Bucking Hell, which is directed by James Kermack.
Who was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes. A really good friend of both of ours, who we helped produce that as a short for him. We worked with him on lots of projects. So that's one of our shorts that's currently on Amazon. So you can go on there. If you've got Amazon Prime, stream it straight away for
free.
And
that's Bucking Hell.
Okay. So that's kind of like a comedy thriller. Which is kind of good. And then we have another one which is currently in festivals, so we're waiting until next year
to have that release. Understood.
It's kind of that weird thing with festivals, you kind of have to keep it kind of locked up.
Absolutely, because that's one of the criteria for festivals, is sort of you don't have a public showing of that particular project so that it goes into the festival.
Because of YouTube and Vimeo.
First preview of these things.
So when those movies or films are ready to be viewed, we need to be able to know exactly how we can find out. So what's your Twitter handle, your Facebook handle, so we can tell the audience so they can follow you?
Yeah, so our Twitter is Vinny VD Film. We also, because we start off as theatre, we have a theatre division as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just our name, Vinny VD Film or Vinny VD Theatre. So you can find us both on those Twitter handles.
Okay.
And our Facebook is Vinny VD Theatre. So if you even type in on Google Vinny VD, it will come up as us anyway.
Yeah.
And it comes up with our website page and all of our projects and what we're currently up to.
And your Twitter handles, you've got Dedegwe.
I wanted my name. It's the annoying thing with Twitter. You have to kind of get in early, otherwise somebody steals it, then you have to kind of...
So someone stole Edward Day-Day?
Yeah, and wow. It's some random person in Thailand who's never posted anything for
That's because they want years. You to reach out to them so they can sell it back to you for like $50,000 yeah, exactly. or something like that. Wow. And at the Minkster. Did anyone try to steal at the Minkster?
Nope.
Okay. I've been meaning to ask you. The
you want to know the meaning?
Yes.
My... Oh God, on air. My nickname to my friends who know me very well, and when I was a child, was Minky.
Okay.
Which comes from a Pink Panther movie. Which was loved by
the
my
Peter
parents.
Sellers movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
He can't say monkey, says Minky, and for some reason it stuck.
Got it.
And it's still used today by okay. people who know me very, very well. They still call me that.
Okay, so if you want to follow Natalie, you can follow her at Twitter at the Minkster. That's the TheMinkstar, while Edward Day-Day's handle is at DeeDeeDWARD. So it's Dade Edward. So that's
just put in Twitter Edward
DeeDeeDWARD.
It'll come up.
Short and sweet surname, you'll get it.
Or just go on VennyVDFilm.com.
There we go.
That works too. while ours is at STB_ResonanceFM, or on Facebook is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, which is what this show is. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
So we're going to do a musical interlude, something that ties in with this show, and I'll explain how it ties in with the show when we finish playing the song. It is Swinging on a Star by John Lithgow.
Oh, would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are. Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears. Kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar. And be better off than you are, Rudy.
Or would you rather be a pig? A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace.
He has no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy
and extremely rude. But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are, Rudy.
Or would you rather be a fish? A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book.
To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery,
he still gets caught. But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. All the monkeys are in the zoo. Every day you'll meet quite a few. So you see, it's all up to you. You know, you're all terrific, but you could be even better than you are. You could be swinging on a star. You could be swinging on a star. You could be swinging on a star.
You should all be in the studio with me right now, because as soon as the song came on, everyone just started dancing and waving their hands. It was a regular party up in here. That was Swinging on a Star by John Lithgow. It was originally sang by, I think Frank Sinatra sang the original. It's probably one of those ones that's been cycled by different people. And I didn't know John Lithgow actually had his own... He's a singer as well. I know he's got a good singing voice. John Lithgow, for those of you who don't know who he is, he's an actor. He's currently number one. When we talk about UK box office top five, he's in Daddy's Home 2, with. Well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes anyway. I love John Lithgow. Yeah, I've been following him since Santa Claus. But he was in Santa Claus, the Santa Claus with Dudley Moore. Then he did Raising Kane, and it was like.
What was the TV show that it was in?
Dexter.
With, No.
Thirty Rock.
Yeah.
With Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He just keeps flipping from like comedy to drama to comedy to drama. He polar opposites. So just Santa Claus, he plays this maniacal like CEO of and it's comedy, right? And then Raising Cain, which is like in 85 or something like that, where he plays. I'm not going to spoil it, but he plays a psychotic. He's a serial, whatever. Anyway, but he's awesome. He's just awesome, and he sang "Swinging on a Star," which again will come up later on today's show. You are listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko,
and I'm Laura Sampson.
In the studio with us, we have Natalie Ann Down and Edward Didi from Vinny Vidi Film. We're going to move on to our next segment, which is UK box office top five. All right, so number five. To be honest, when I was looking, doing my research, I found something called Frozen. It was Frozen and number five. And then I did further research, and I found out actually it was not the Frozen, the cartoon that we all know, or the animated movie that we know. I think it's a glitch or something. Anyway, number five is Thor Ragnarok, which we've talked about tirelessly on this show. And I
we
will
love
keep on
Thor
talking.
Ragnarok.
Well,
don't
I'll keep
we?
Saying. Have you
we
guys
do.
Seen Thor Ragnarok?
I am going to see it hopefully next.
Go and see it tonight. Go
is it good
now.
Because I hear lots of stuff about how they've gone like a
Taika Waititi
kind of like,
yeah.
What We Do in the Shadows,
yes.
One of the funniest films ever made.
That's
so.
A brilliant film.
That one, Eagle versus Shark, it's just he is on point with that movie. It's fantastic. Go and see Thor Ragnarok. Keep it in top five so we can talk about it again. We'll talk about it. We keep talking about it whenever we can. Number four, Murder on the Orient Express.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is Kenneth Branagh. Great. It's really good. If you know the story, obviously, because the Agatha Christie, the scenery, everything in the direction is fantastic, and it's done so well at the box office. I think they're kind of greenlighting Death on the Nile, so that he can then carry on.
Oh, gosh,
they're going back to
the
Peter
Ustinov
track, aren't they? Redoing all those classic
Hercule Poirot ones. So I guess you're going to have a new generation of people who basically have Kenneth Branagh as their Hercule Poirot.
I'm still not 100% convinced by
Kenneth
Branagh.
So who's your, we'll go around the room, who's your Kenneth Branagh, Laura? Who's your Hercule Poirot?
Not Kenneth Branagh.
Okay, fair enough. Natalie, what about you?
It's David Suchet.
True. I mean, I've seen one of the Hercule Poirot movies. I think it was. I can't remember which one it was.
Death on the Nile is probably the most famous.
Probably now. Death on the Nile. But I don't think that it wasn't that one. It was another one. But anyway, the name escapes me. But David Suchet definitely is mine. But that's number four, Murder on the Orient Express. Number three, Justice League. So we hadn't seen it last week. I saw it today. Laura, you saw it today?
I saw it today too.
What did you think?
And I think that most of the awful reviews that it has received are completely unjustified. It was fun. I actually watched Wonder Woman for the first time last week, so that's still sort of fresh in my mind, and the things that she does in it and the kind of sort of personal journey that she goes on. I was sort of more on board for that than most people would have been, having seen Wonder Woman.
So
like
Wonder Woman's story
ago.
Was fresh in your mind when you went to go see Justice League.
Yes.
That's probably why. So that's why her storyline in Justice League sort of resonated with you a lot more.
Yeah, although it wasn't completely right. I don't think there was something that chimed slightly wrongly with me about her being like the grown up and the guys all like doing their immature thing.
Yeah.
I think one of the lines in it is, you know, I'm working with children. Yeah.
So okay, I will not fully agree with you. I won't fully disagree with you either. I don't think it was terrible, but as you said, you disagree with the kicking that it's gotten. I agree with some of the kicking that it's got.
What do you think's What do you think? What do you think would have particularly hurt the makers of that film?
Okay.
In the bad reviews.
Well, for one, there's no escaping it. There's a character, a certain character that comes back, and if you, spoiler alert, I'm going to say spoiler alert. There's a certain character
coming.
There you go. if you don't want to know what happens in Superman. Justice League, this in the cinema at the moment. Just close your ears for 5 seconds. I will say it really quickly. Okay, starting now. Superman comes back. Anyway, right. So this character that is in this movie, spoiler alert's finished. I'm not going to spoil anything more. But as it's in the news, it's something happened with this particular actor, and he went off to do another project, and he grew a mustache, and so when he came back to do reshoots for this, one studio wanted him to take off the mustache, the other studio didn't want him to take off the mustache. So basically, it's clearly obvious when you see this character in thing that something has happened to his face. Right, it is clearly obvious.
They couldn't Photoshop it.
And the worst part is, he's the first thing you see when the movie starts. When the movie starts, he's the first thing you see, and the first thing my eye got drawn to was his top lip. And the first thing I thought was, "Why did you just get punched in the face?" That's what it looks like. And you asked what else could they have done.
There was something wrong with the baddie, I think.
Well, okay, you talk about the baddie. The baddie, Justice League suffers from the same sort of issue that Marvel has been plagued with, which is no real strong villains. The reason why I think Marvel is actually better than DC in the cinematic universe is that Marvel are playful with their films. They know that these are superhero movies. They know that they want to try and tell a stronger story behind it, which is what makes the movie great. Mm. But they don't forget that, okay, these are movies that are about people who can fly and can bend metal with their fingers and whatnot. So they have that as the main thing going forward. And any underlying themes are underneath. So you see something like Captain America Civil War, which is more about division between in ideas about registration, etc. Or Captain America Winter Soldier, which is kind of like more of a spy thriller as opposed to just a superhero movie. So they're taking those superhero movies and they're trying to do something different with it, which is why they keep succeeding. They're playing with it. Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. It's all out fun. There's a lot of terrible things happen in Thor Ragnarok, but it's all in good humor.
But maybe it's coming from I think it always stems from the writing, because I think the plot I was saying to you guys earlier, mm-hmm. about DC, I think when the studio gets involved,
yeah.
they have a certain benchmark that they know that we need to guarantee this amount of sales. So they're in on the development process well early, where you have Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
I think that's why the first Avengers was so successful, because mm-hmm. he added these comic elements and made them almost...
Sure.
They might be superheroes, but they're dealing with human kind of, elements where they're... Iron Man's a bit of a jackass, and he's mm-hmm. a bit kind of like, knows it all, and they have certain kind of human qualities.
I see where you're coming from with that. The only reason why I would disagree with that is that Marvel have that sort of creative control over their property as well, but... what they invite their directors and their writers to come in and work with them. But the fact that Marvel aren't totally guilt-free of that is what happened with Ant-Man. You had Edgar Wright, who came in with his own vision, and he had to step off the project because Marvel said, no, this is what we wanted. This is the direction we want to go in. So now you have Edgar Wright fans that are out there wanting to see the Edgar Wright version of Ant-Man. But that's not entirely why... That's not, in my opinion anyway, why DC fails. DC is what they seem to do with their movies. They're more about style over substance. So you're seeing, with Zack Snyder having brought in to do the whole Justice League thing, it's dark and all the DC movies at the moment are great if you pause it. So if you've got something happening on screen and you pause it, you get a great image. You get a great visual of Aquaman standing with the waves crashing over him, Superman hovering over people while their houses are, you know, being washed away, and so on. Batman standing in the dark when, or standing in, you know, on a tower or something. So they're all about the visual.
That's a real problem I have with DC Universe films, sort of, and have had for a long time. Sin City, that's another one which works with the sound off as a sort of reminder of the comic of sort of reading it panel by panel.
Don't mock Sin City.
It's a brilliant story,
sure.
but there's just something missing from it as a film, because I feel like the people who have had the most control over making it are massive comics fans, and they just can't get that medium out of their head. They can't sort of make the creative leap into the other.
Sorry, but then is the whole Dark Knight series from Christopher Nolan then an anomaly, because everyone loves that?
And that's the thing. If you look at the Dark Knight trilogy, right? He had different. It wasn't a comic book hero movie. It was just a vigilante.
Yeah.
You see, you're talking about terrorism and everything. So there are themes. It's not just about the style. It's not just about how he looks. I mean,
Batman's
that was great.
Such a great character, though. There's been so many brilliant Batman films,
since
Zack
Snyder's taken it over, he becomes the worst character. Yeah,
I mean, ultimately, the two studios here are creating two different worlds. Mm-hmm. You know, what Batman is a very dark comic, and DC is very dark. And there will be a whole bunch of people who want to watch films that are not Marvel, not colourful, not light, not funny.
Sure.
And if they all did the same type of films, it's not two universes. And I think you're going to have people in the two camps, and they're being very clever about separating the styles in which they do it to make sure that you go, this is a DC, it's not DC trying to be Marvel. And Marvel goes, this is us, and this is what we do.
Well,
I'm sure that there's an audience type for both. Yeah.
True, but in that battle, DC are losing because Marvel are winning. Anyway, that was number three, Justice League. Number two is Paddington 2, which is a great movie. It's an amazing movie, go see it. We talked about it last time. Daddy's Home 2 has John Lithgow, Mel Gibson, Danny Wahlberg. Not Danny Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
And Will Ferrell. Reason why I'm speeding it up is because we now need to. I want us to jump into our top five, just so we can talk about it, and then and get into the top five films that we're talking about, which is our next segment.
We can't talk about Mark Wahlberg the next 10 minutes?
Can't talk about Mark Wahlberg. Let's move on to our next segment. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. Our next segment is our top five favorite films. So the topic of our top five film and TV discussion today is embarrassing likes. Movies that you love to watch, but you know that as soon as you talk to someone about it or say to someone, oh, I love watching this movie, you'll get ridiculed out of the room. So we'll start with our guests. Natalie, what is your number five and number four embarrassing like?
Number five... See, when I was kind of having a think about this, I thought, actually, I'm going to say them very proudly. So, right, I don't want to be embarrassed by these.
I will try not to.
At number five, I love Flash Gordon. Flash Gordon. I know that it's bad.
No, no, no.
I could watch Flash Gordon over and over.
You're
Brian
in safe
Blessed's
company.
Performance.
There you go. You're in safe company, and that's why I think we're going to have an issue with this particular segment today, because we're going to be going around the room saying, "No, but I love that movie. I love that movie."
That kind of go to show the reason why people, I don't know why people aren't a little bit more open about their film choices. There seems to be a sort of hindrance to want to say the thing that you really love,
so it becomes much more easy
in case you get ridiculed. But actually, perhaps if everyone just said what they really wanted to, we might be in a
fair enough. So Flash Gordon's your number five. What's your number four?
Willow.
Willow.
Willow. Sorry. It's going on there. It's a childhood favourite. I could see that film. It cheers me up. Val Kilmer in his heyday. And, love that film.
Fair enough. Ed, what's your number five? What's your number four?
My number five is Lucy, which is the killer. I love that film.
That's Scarlett Johansson film, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I think because... is it Luc Besson?
Yes.
I think because... even within the writing, it's so French within it. I just because it's just so mad and kind of like this weird caper that this woman is obviously getting so much of her brain capacity. And I just love that.
It started off really well. I have to say, I did think it started off really well, but I think it just didn't know where it was going.
I just loved the look on Morgan Freeman's face, because even with it, you could tell he's like, even his acting, he's thinking, I don't know what is going on, but I'm just going to go with it. Even you can tell, which I find hilarious.
No, fair enough.
It's just such a mix of genres and, I like it.
Okay, fair enough. That's your number five. What's your number four?
My number four is Lake Placid.
That's a good film.
I love Lake Placid. That film.
That's Elizabeth Shue, right? Elizabeth Shue and
it has Bridget Fonda, Betty White.
Betty White, yes.
Brendan Gleeson is in it.
I've seen that sheriff more once, so I'll go with that.
It's David Arquette is in it as well, right? He's the sheriff, isn't he?
No, Brendan Gleeson's the sheriff.
Lake Placid. That's the one where Betty White's feeding the crocodile,
yes,
right? Yeah,
that's the one.
Okay.
Because it's just this.
I haven't seen it in such a long time. Yeah. And it's like, oh, Lake Placid, it was funny.
Because of this, because we had to do this list. Because of that, and that came into mind, I had to go rewatch it this afternoon.
Fair enough. For those of you who don't know, Lake Placid is a great B-movie about this giant crocodile that kept getting fed by this old lady.
Go watch it. It's Jaws with a crocodile.
Exactly. It is, yeah. Laura, what's your number five?
I have to say, this is not one I've watched before, but I am definitely going to be watching it when
I go and watch Lake Placid. It is funny. Okay, so what's your number five and number four, Laura?
Okay, so I am the girl who loves bad animated movies. I'm not sorry about that.
Mention Neverending Story again?
No, because
it's a running gag that she's sure she's pulling this on me.
Every episode she talks about Neverending Story. It's not.
I love that movie.
It doesn't count as a bad movie to me. No. My number five are the Care Bears movies. They are almost universally disgraced as barefaced selling tactics, like the Emoji movie was. I was a bit young to actually have very many of the actual soft toys. I came to it a bit later. But having rewatched both of them, I now realise what inroads they made into my imagination. The baddies are actually quite scary, especially in the second movie where all of the goodies actually get turned into a giant chandelier and cut, and they're each crystals. Anyway, I could go on about this for a long time, but that's my number five. I still love those movies. My number four is Save the Last Dance.
Yeah.
I know that has Julia Stiles. Yes,
it might win the prize for the cheesiest possible love scene song.
It had Kerry Washington in it as well. Yes. Yeah,
it had lots of extremely beautiful, good actors in it, and Sean Patrick Thomas. The first time I'd seen him after Cruel Intentions, which is where I fell in love with him, because you see him with not very much on. Anyway, you also see him not very much on in this, but you you know, the kind of Juilliard audition movie,
yeah,
but so much cheesier.
I'm gonna say that's a very, very good call on embarrassing, like, because I'm embarrassed to say that you like that film.
Listeners, if you could see my cheeks right now,
I don't sound embarrassed.
I'm gonna tell you this.
I remember going to the cinema to go watch that. I caught a bus to go watch it in Wimbledon College when I was back in Wimbledon way back in the day. Watched it, I enjoyed it then, saw it a few years afterwards, and I was like, what did I spend my money on? My number five is Ang Lee's Hulk. Now, a lot of people bash this movie, and I still think, with the exception of Mark Ruffalo's performance as the Hulk in the Avengers movies going forward, I think compared this to the Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton, I would take Ang Lee's Hulk any day of the week. Any day of the week. I prefer that. I would watch that right now if I were to go home and watch that, compared to the Incredible Hulk. I thought it was much better. I thought Eric Bana was better than Ed Norton as the Incredible Hulk, and I'll fight for that movie any day of the week. So yeah, that's my number five. My number four. Well, you heard the song "Swinging on a Star." That was from Hudson Hawk. Bruce Willis, Danny Aiello, Andy McDowell, Richard E. Grant, Sarah Bernhardt. It's a movie where Bruce Willis is a thief. I guess it's been a while since I've seen it, but I love that movie. He's a burglar, right? And he gets entangled with the Vatican and so on and so forth. And it's been critically panned. A lot of people hate that movie, but I have to say, for me, it is my number four of embarrassing likes, because if I'm flicking through channels and I see it on, I will stop and I'll watch it. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
With us in the studio, we have Natalie Ann Downs and Edward Dede from Venividi Film. We had someone on Twitter respond, Alcohol Label said Blade Runner and Midnight Express as embarrassing like. Who would say that
Blade Runner is embarrassing?
Yeah.
Maybe the new one.
Oh, I liked the new one.
Here's
your face.
You still wouldn't. I mean,
should I add that
if
to
you
my
admitted
list?
If you admitted liking that movie, you wouldn't have to be embarrassed because lots of other people still like it right now.
Yeah, fair enough.
Maybe in a couple of years when you compare the old one and the new one, and you feel like you liked the new one more than the old one, you might have a pause.
Well, fair enough.
But that remains to be seen.
Thank you, Alcohol Label, for that. For those two, we disagreed that they are embarrassing. We think they're great films. But Nat, what is your number three and your number two?
Okay, so I had struggled with this because I had so many on my list to kind of cut them down. But I think coming in at number three for me is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, that's not... How is that embarrassing?
You seen it recently?
Okay, maybe not recently.
Dear.
No, fair enough.
Dear.
I love that. I love that series of films and the series that came after.
The giant custard cream.
Yeah, that's the one. They're sitting on an ant and they're carrying a custard cream and the ant is terribly done.
Do you still watch that today?
Okay. Yeah.
So I can understand that. Sorry.
You know, these are the kind of films that, you know, if you don't feel very well, they are going on the telly.
On? Okay. What's your number two?
My number two is Overboard with Goldie Hawn. I could watch that chick flick round and round and round. It's the most implausible story of all time. It is just brilliant. It is brilliant. Yeah. It's nothing else.
I'm just making note now. Ed, what's your number three? What is your number two?
Well, my number three is Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale.
That is a great movie. That's a great movie.
I think it's absolutely camp and just like the visual effects, and it's such hammy acting, but they just go with it. So I just, that's my number three.
Hugh Jackman cannot do any wrong for me. So Van Helsing, I love Van Helsing. What's your number two?
My number two, it's weird because you mentioned it's changing now. My number two is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
How is that a bad film to watch?
No, it's not. I mean,
that's the one you need to be embarrassed about. That's but I think the Excellent Adventure, that's pretty good. Oh,
but now I'm stuck now because another one slipped in. hard because there's so many.
We have enough time, we'll do honourable mentions afterwards. Laura, what's your number three and what's your number two?
My number three, this is in order of sort of general what everyone else thinks to be badness.
You can't change your list now, so speak it and live in shame.
My number three is Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ.
Why is that an embarrassing like? It's a weird film to pick, but
I think it's a film that outs anyone who loves it as a liker of
torture porn.
I mean, we have spoken about the Saw movies before and how I may have a slightly soft spot in my heart for those kind of movies.
Okay,
I watched for the first time because I was hoping it was going to be a biblical epic in the style of other biblical epics that I'd seen and liked on a Sunday afternoon. But when I saw it, it was just so much more.
I can't look at you, Laura. It's you're watching Passionate Christ for the torture porn. That's just weird.
No. Honestly, I don't. I take it back. Maybe.
Oh, wake up again.
Should I?
What?
Should I move swiftly on?
Please, to number two.
I'm going to move to Krull, which is my number two. I've loved this film since I was way too young to watch it. It was my dad's favourite movie in the sort of, I mean, all throughout the 80s, I think. He introduced it to me as soon as I could really understand English. And you, whoever doesn't know this story, who doesn't know the story of Krull? Anyway, there's a prince and a fellowship of companions. They set out to rescue a damsel in distress from a fortress of alien invaders whose castle has appeared on the planet Krull by some sort of magic that no one really knows what it is. It's got a very young Liam Neeson in it, and I could go on for a while, but anyway, watch Krull. Okay. And don't be embarrassed.
So that's about, your number two. So Passion of the Christ was your number three, and Krull was your number two. My number two, Magic Mike. I love Magic Mike. I am proud to say I will watch Magic Mike if it was on today. When Channing Tatum hits that dance floor, I'm like, wow. Yeah. Absolutely. The sequel, even better. I love both movies, and I know it's a weird thing for a guy to...
I don't know if it's an embarrassing film to like, but I think it's a very brave thing to declare.
Yeah,
it's very unusual.
Absolutely.
For
me to as a heterosexual male love
Magic Mike.
We had our little kind of group chat yesterday, and I said one which, like, I just love Laura's reaction to, which is, I'll say, on my honourable mention.
Sure.
For me, anyway.
Well, that was my number three, Magic Mike. I stand by it. Channing Tatum is awesome. And my number two. That was my number three. My number two, Wild Wild West. Wild Wild West. I'm a huge Will Smith fan. Anyone who knows me, I've been a huge Will Smith fan from 60 Degrees of Separation right through to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, right through to Independence Day, Men in Black. Everything he's done has been fantastic.
And then,
Until 7 pounds. Seven pounds was where I dropped off Will Smith, and then After Earth, I'm like, okay, we'll part companies at that point. But Wild Wild West was his first box office flop.
It was his
first box office flop, and that basically was the start of his sort of like let's put it this way, it wasn't a box office flop, it was a critical flop. Everything else before that had been critically successful, but that was the first critical flop. The 7 pounds was the first box office flop. Wild Wild West is my number two.
That's the one with the soundtrack that's got the sample from the Stevie Wonder.
Wild West. Yeah.
I wish.
We're
going
straight to the Wild Wild West. We're going straight. Anyway, sorry. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson. Forgot my name there.
In the studio. The power will. With us, we have Natalie Andown from Venividi Film. And with her, Ed Day-Day from Venividi Film. Natalie, what's your number one?
Now, this just proves that this experiment, as I was saying to you before, because starred at the top of my list of the all-time rubbish film that I could watch round and round is Hudson Hawk. Uh-huh. It is your number.
My number four. Yeah.
Number four. There is any film that can end with a castle explosion and Bruce Willis escaping on a flying contraption made by Leonardo da Vinci.
It's amazing.
It's got to be a classic.
Absolutely. Ed, what's your number one?
Mine is The Mummy Returns.
Actually, I quite like that film. Brendan Fraser, right?
Yeah. It's even got The Rock in it.
Despite the special effects.
Animated.
Absolutely.
The Scorpion King.
That was great. Laura, what's your number one?
Mine is Jupiter Ascending.
Chantel's made a lot of appearance today. It's like...
I don't think my cheeks are ever going to go back to
another
the
Channing Tatum movie.
Yeah. Yeah. My number one is Showgirls, Elizabeth Berkley.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh,
no.
Oh, you and the stripper movies.
Oh,
well.
Yeah. Paul, I know, right? Yeah. Paul Verhoeven and Elizabeth Berkley. Amazing film. No, it's not. It's a terrible film, but I love that film. I'll watch it. Well, so we've come towards the end of the show. We've got last bit we need to do, Netflix and Amazon recommendation. Natalie, do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I'm completely obsessed with Amazon Prime Stars Outlander.
Oh, okay.
Outlander.
Yeah.
I love Outlander.
That's popped
watch
up on the show before.
If you haven't watched it, watch it.
Ed, what's your recommendation?
Godless, which I watched over
I've
the weekend.
Watching
yeah,
that. Yes.
It's really good. If you're a fan of Westerns, you'll love this. Really good. Jack O'Connell, Michelle Dockery from Downton Abbey.
Yep.
Yeah, really kind of.
And Bill Pullman.
Inventive Western. No, it's Jeff.
Jeff Bridges. Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
All
sorry,
of them, they're all the same person.
Who plays the villain.
Yes.
Really good in this.
And Laura?
Mine is a Netflix, and it's Dee Reese's new film, Mudbound, which is out end of this week. I saw it at the BFI London Film Festival. It's definitely worth a watch.
I agree.
It's getting lots
mine
and
too.
Lots of love.
Excellent. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I want to thank Natalie and Ed for joining us today. Thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you. Right, this is going to be the end of the show for the season. We are coming back for a Christmas episode, so we'll stay on our Twitter and our Facebook pages, and we'll announce when that show is coming on. But this has been Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
Thank you for listening.
And see you at Christmas.
At Christmas.